Again, we have the privilege and the pleasure of looking together into the Word of God to discover truth. And we have been going very slowly, very patiently through the book of Jeremiah. And what we have been reading in the book of Jeremiah has not been happy at all, not happy at all. We've learned, of course, that this is really a historical parable. It is a true fact of history, everything that we read that is happening here. And yet we cannot understand why it is in the Bible until we understand that it is pointing to the time in which we're living, the end of the church age, as God is bringing his wrath on the local congregations using Judah and earlier than that Israel as an illustration of the fact that even though they are God's special people, in time God does bring his wrath upon them if they do not remain faithful. And we're at a very, very curious time. The Jerusalem has been destroyed by the Babylonians, and now the captain of the guard, who is the speaking under the authority of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, they rule now over Judea. They are the rulers. And he has come up with a plan whereby the poor and a number of the people would be left in Jerusalem and in Judea to till the fields and gather in the grapes and the harvest. That would all be done under the auspices of or under the authority of King Nebuchadnezzar. Looked like a very lovely plan for those who had been left behind. You know, God, again, we talked about this at length last time. God had said repeatedly, you've got to leave because if you stay here, you are going to die. You are to surrender to Babylon and live in Babylon, not here in Judea. And there were a number of men who were princes in Israel who were friends of Jeremiah, as a matter of fact, and even protected him at times. Jeremiah is present with these men. He still is with the Israelites. The Jews who have remained in Judea. And he has had permission from God to do that. He was simply the mouth of God. If they're going to get a message from God, ordinarily it would have come through Jeremiah. Let's read verse 7 again. Now, when all the captains of the forces which were in the fields, even they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah the son of Ahikam governor in the land, and had committed unto him men and women and children and the poor of the land of them that were not carried away captive to Babylon. Then they came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, even Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, and Johanan, and Jonathan the son of Kareah, and Sariah the son of Tanhumeth, and the sons of Ephah the Netophathite, and Jezaniah, the son of a Maacathite, they and their men. Now we're going to study Johanan, and we're going to find that he also is apparently a very faithful man. Because look what happens. He comes to Gedaliah with some very serious information. Very serious information. And he said unto him, dost thou certainly know? In other words, are you aware that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee? Ishmael, he wants to be the governor. He wants to be the governor. Dost thou not certainly know that Baalis, the king of the Ammonites, I'm reading again verse 14, has sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee? But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, believed them not. Now this was not only coming from from Ishmael, but also from some other of the captains, some of the other men who had authority in the past. And why did not he believe? Well, that's the problem. Gedaliah was going on he was convinced that everything he was doing was right. He had been appointed governor. Everything was coming together very smoothly, and he was wise in his own eyes completely. He should have been going constantly to Jeremiah. Now what? What's going on? With this kind of news, he should have gone to Jeremiah. Is that true? Is that something I ought to react to? But no, come on. It's not going to happen. He felt secure. And then Johanan takes the next step. As I indicated, as this plot thickens, we find that Johanan plays a more and more important place, and he'll continue to play a very important place for a little while. Verse 15, then Johanan, the son of Kareah, spake to Gedaliah in Mizpah secretly, saying, let me go, I pray thee, and I will slay Ishmael, the son of Nethaliah, and no man shall know it. Wherefore should he slay thee, that all the Jews which are gathered unto thee should be scattered, and the remnant in Judah perish? But Gedaliah the son of Ahikam said unto Johanan the son of Kareah, thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael. Now we can understand why this is all recorded here, until we notice what I said earlier. Jeremiah is there, and they're not talking to Jeremiah. These are very serious matters, exceedingly serious matters. And you know, my guess is, this is a guess, we shouldn't speculate, but here are these men who have been listening to Jeremiah for some years. They know that the command had been that everybody had to get out of the land. And now, fortuitously, suddenly, everything opens wide open, and here is they're free in the land. They have the blessing of King Nebuchadnezzar. They have all of these riches in front of them, and they don't want to listen to Jeremiah. They don't dare go to him for fear that he might somehow throw a monkey wrench in their thinking and make them uncomfortable. It's like, have you ever had a time in your life when you're monkeying around with a besetting sin of some kind, and you're staying away as you read the Bible, any passages that might relate to that sin? You don't really want to have God talk to you at all, because you are, it's all subconscious, but you know you're doing wrong. Deep in your heart, you know you're doing wrong. But on the other hand, you want what you want. You want that. I want it. And I don't want to get interrupted by the Bible. The minute that we find that we tend to stay away from the Bible, watch out. It means we got a problem. We really have a serious problem. We should always be ready to go open-minded to the Bible. Well, now let's see what happens. Now it came to pass, chapter 41. Now this matter of Johanan wanting to murder Ishmael, well, it makes a lot of common sense, because he was right. Ishmael was there to murder Gedaliah, but he was doing it all wrong. It made a lot of common sense, but he was doing it all wrong. He should have been going to Jeremiah, or they should have figured out another plan. If this news was broad enough, and it was, so that many of the captains knew, the other people knew about this plot of Ishmael to kill Gedaliah, then certainly they could have begun to isolate Ishmael or to watch him or get him out of the country or whatever. There's a lot of other answers, but this is what's going on here is all man-made. It's what man thinks, and this is what happens when we don't go to God. Now it came to pass, chapter 41, in the seventh month, that Ishmael, the son of Nethaliah, the son of Elishama, of the seed royal, notice he is a very, very, he's a prince also, of the seed royal, and the princes of the king, even 10 men with him, came unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah. And there they did eat bread together in Mizpah. Oh, isn't this lovely? Isn't this lovely? They are coming here on a peace mission, and they're going to banquet together. They're going to eat bread with Gedaliah. But they have murder in their heart. Then arose Ishmael, the son of Nethaliah, and the 10 men that were with him, and smote Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, with a sword, and slew him whom the king of Babylon had made governor over the land. You notice how God is showing us how serious this crime was. He had been made governor. Now that was something that Ishmael, that Gedaliah should never have accepted. He should have gotten out and become a captive to Babylon, but nevertheless he had been made governor. Then arose, and that of course was his sin. Ishmael also slew all the Jews that were with him, even with Gedaliah at Mizpah, and the Chaldeans that were found there, and the men of war. In other words, this was a real talk about a murder plot. There were a number of people. We have no idea. Could have been 50, 60, 100 people who were killed. But these 10 men had come very, very carefully. They had come looking like they wanted peace, like they wanted to be friends. And then they rose up and did all their killing. Then in verse 4, the killing doesn't stop there. It came to pass, the second day after he had slain Gedaliah, and no man knew it, that there came certain from Shechem, from Shiloh, and from Samaria. These are others who should have been captives of Babylon, and they've stayed in the land. Even 80 men, having their beards shaven, and their clothes rent, and having cut themselves with offerings and incense in their hand to bring them to the house of the Lord. You know, you read this and you say, these were holy men. They loved the Lord. They're coming to the house of the Lord with their incense and with their offerings, and they have humbled themselves. They have shaved their heads. That's another way of showing humility. And they are God-fearing men. But what was their problem? They were in total rebellion against God. They're setting up their own scene. In these chapters, we're finding that whether it's Gedaliah, or whether it's Ishmael, or Johanan, or who, ultimately, they all have their own plan. They know better than God. They are wise guys. They're wise in their own eyes. And that's the way it is in the churches today, I'm sorry to say. They're wise in their own eyes. They have it all figured out. And so when we come with information from the Bible, they don't want to listen. They don't want to listen. After all, they have it all figured out. And doesn't it appear that all is going well? And they fail to realize that the pit is awaiting them. The pit is awaiting them. In fact, there's a pit awaiting here. Notice in verse 6, and Ishmael, he is a real devil. I mean, he comes as an angel of light. But Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, went forth from Mizpah to meet them, weeping all along as he went. In other words, it's like he is saying, oh, my friends, I'm so glad to see you, and I empathize with you. And so they just have a wonderful weeping session together as they are trying to prove to themselves that all of this is what God wants, and it's all in rebellion against God. And so they come to Gedaliah, and when it was so, verse 7, when they came into the midst of the city, that Ishmael the son of Nethaniah slew them and cast them into the midst of the pit, he and the men that were with him. We're going to learn more about that pit in a few minutes, but let's go on for the next verse. But 10 men were found among them that said unto Ishmael, slay us not, for we have treasures in the field of wheat and of barley and of oil and of honey. So he forbare and slew them not among their brethren. Now I'm puzzled, why did God insert that information? But it does underscore greed. In other words, ultimately Gedaliah, as the governor of the land, my, I think of the kings of our day and the politicians of our day, how rich they become. Greed is everywhere. And because these 10 men had some very valuable, and remember, this was a country, a farming country. It isn't a manufacturing country, it's a farming country. So farming products are where the riches are. And here he says, okay, I'll spare you. And he made a deal, some kind of a deal, I suppose, with them, whereby he would have access to all of these riches. And he spared them. And the best I can see is that this gives an insight into what's going on, and it's greed, you know, for money, that's finally what I want. And that, of course, is the god of this world. The love of money is a root of all evil. It's the god of this world. So so he forbear and slew them not among their brethren. Now verse 9. We have a very curious verse. Now the pit wherein Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the men, that would have been all those that he had first killed when he killed them in Mizpah, and then it included 70 more men. So it was a big pit. It was a big pit. And it was empty, obviously, and all the bodies were thrown in there, so that nobody would know about this whole terrible murder that has been going on. Now the pit wherein Ishmael had cast all the dead bodies of the man whom he had slain because of Gedaliah, was that which Asa the king had made for fear of Baasha, king of Israel. And Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, filled it with them that were slain. Now, isn't that an interesting statement to put right in the middle of all of this? What? And you keep reading, you don't see anything more about Asa. What's it talking about? Well, it is a guidepost that's saying, hey, look, stop right here. Go see what happened back there about a pit. Well, we search the record about Asa. We don't read about a pit. But we read some very interesting things about Asa. Let's go back to 2 Chronicles, chapter 16. 2 Chronicles, chapter 16. Now, let me set the stage here. Asa was the great-grandson of King Solomon. He was the third king that ruled after Solomon died over Judea. He was a very God-fearing king. He, in fact, was the father of Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat was also a very God-fearing king. And Asa loved the Lord and trusted the Lord. We read, for example, in 2 Chronicles, chapter 14, where we read in verse 9, "And there came out against them Zerah the Ethiopian with a host of 1,000,000. That's 1,000,000 soldiers. That ain't small potatoes. That's a big army. "With 1,000,000 and 300 chariots, and came unto Maresha. Then Asa went out against him, and they set the battle in array in the valley of Zephathan of Maresha. And Asa cried unto Jehovah his God and said, 'Jehovah, it is nothing with thee to help, whether with many or with them that have no power. Help us, O Jehovah our God, for we rest on thee, and in thy name we go against this multitude. O Jehovah, thou art our God. Let not man prevail against thee.' So Jehovah smote the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. And Asa and the people that were with him pursued them unto Gerar, and the Ethiopians were overthrown, that they could not recover themselves, for they were destroyed before the Lord and before his host, and they carried away much spoil." All right, here we see an outstanding example of trusting in the Lord. Asa was a powerful king himself, and yet when this huge army came against him, he knew he could not fight with them. He went right to the Lord and prayed for the Lord's help, and the Lord did give him help. And because that was his conduct, that was the nature of his thinking. He was a God-fearing king. For 35 years, the first 35 years of his life, he had everything went peacefully. Everything went his way. He was trusting in the Lord. But then in chapter 16, there's a change. In the 36th year of his reign, Baasha, king of Israel, came up against Judah and built Ramah. Now, remember that Asa was king of Judah, and there was the neighboring kingdom of Israel that was also growing stronger, and it had a king now who wanted to intimidate and to conquer Judah somehow. And so, first of all, he built this northern king, Baasha, built a big fortress, a city called Ramah, and we know it was big from other language in the Bible, and strong, and it was like a fortress. Asa became very concerned because he saw that the king of Israel wanted to quarrel with him, and they might get into a fight. And so Asa began to pray the Lord, "Oh Lord, what do I do now?" No. He fell into the same snare that we all fall into when we take our eyes off God. Then Asa brought out silver. I'm reading verse 2. and gold out of the treasure of the house of Jehovah and of the king's house, and sent to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, that dwelt at Damascus, saying, there is a league between me and thee, as there was between my father and thy father. Behold, I have sent thee silver and gold. Go, break thy league with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may depart from me. Okay, well, we're going to have to stop right there. In our next study, we're going to go on and develop this a little further, and we're going to try to find out, how does the pit figure in this? So far, we haven't read about a pit, but we're going to have to factor that in someplace, and we'll look at that in our next study.